Hi everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Coder Crew with myself, Cameron Blackwood, and my co-founder and co-host, Colin Riddell. For people that haven't come across us before, and I think there'll be a lot after our event last week with X-Design, Colin, do you want to introduce yourself properly, and I'll introduce myself afterwards?
Absolutely, yeah, thanks Cameron. Yeah, my name's Colin Riddell. I'm the co-host of this lovely podcast with the amazing Cameron Blackwood, and I'm a software engineer and technologist. I've been involved in various software engineering and technology things over the last 14 years in the industry. I've done a bit of like low-level stuff. I've done a bit of high-level stuff. I've been involved in product management stuff, and I've been an instructor in a coding bootcamp called CodeClan, which is based in Scotland as well. And yeah, I'm just really chuffed to be on this podcast and help you out and all the rest of it, Cameron. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming on board, and yeah, I appreciate you you saying yes when I asked you to be a co-founder. And yeah, so for people who aren't familiar with me, my name's Cameron Blackwood. I've spent most of my career working between London and Scotland. I'm a former technical recruiter, but I've been a software engineer since leaving that field because, simply put, I was speaking to people that were having more fun than me, having more free time and making more money. So I thought, this looks interesting. Started writing code, fell in love with it. And after that, it was just, you know, a whole new world, which had, you know, plenty of bumps on the way. Like, I'm not going to try and delude anyone into thinking that it's a super easy journey as a career changer, but it's one that's 100% worth doing. If you find that you have a passion for coding, then I 100% implore people to do it. And today's episode is going to be actually centered around a blog that Colin has already written on our website, and we're going to talk about some insights around CVs or resumes for our American friends. Let's go over the basics off. I mean, we're talking about a well-written CV here. Colin, what would you say is some of the really high-level points there? What would we look for?
Well, I guess it's good to just sort of hit the reset button and think about what a CV actually is. And, you know, I've reviewed tons of CVs over the years in both from the capacity of somebody who's hiring and in the capacity of somebody who is helping, like, you know, bootcamp graduates and not only bootcamp graduates, but degree graduates as well. And like the thing we need to just keep in mind before we get to like any of the big takeaways is that a CV is just a document that's designed to like catch the attention of a recruiter, somebody like your former self. And I think the first mistake that a lot of people make, and as I say, we've not even got to the juicy like really really juicy bits of feedback yet, and the juicy points to make. The big thing is just to remember that like it's just a document that tells people that are reading it about you, right? It's just a document for communicating your skills and experience in such a way that somebody can quickly just look at that and figure out if you are the kind of person that they think might be suitable, right? Like, I think a lot of people write CVs and assume that somebody's going to make a decision on whether they should hire you entirely based on your CV. And that's, I think we all fall into that trap, because in most of my advice and most of the things I talk about when I'm talking about CVs are based around the idea that people are trying really hard to like market their entire background. And really, it's just a document. It's not any formal record of your achievement. It's not any formal record of every project and every company you've worked on. Like, if anything, it's the opposite of that. It's like a brief record, and it's designed to just like show people, to catch someone's eye, right? So like, maybe you could tell me a bit about from what you're looking for very, very high level as a recruiter, because I'm dead keen to hear what you think. You know, you're looking through a pile of CVs, like what, there must be some certain things that stand out.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And especially about your point about how there's going to be a yes, no decision based off a CV. Mm. It's never going to be the case, ever, ever. Like, you'd be mad to run a business like that. Yep. So what happens is typically in the modern world, let's say I'm recruiting for a junior Node.js developer. I'll put up the advertisement on LinkedIn or whatever job board, and then we have something in the background called an ATS, an applicant tracking system. So once I get an application through from them, it pops up on my ATS and I can have a look at it. And, you know, I'll see the person's CV. Usually they'll answer some questions like, can you legally work in the UK or whatever jurisdiction? You know, what's your experience with Node.js? You might ask someone just to filter someone out who's chancing it a bit and has never heard of programming. I'll be able to look at their CV. So from there, all I want to do is to have the key information conveyed to me very quickly. So all I want to do is just see the highlights, and that is all. That's all. So you just want to hit the main points, and that's why I think actually potentially leading on to another point, fancy crazy layouts aren't actually really great in my opinion. And I think you just want to convey very quickly. It's almost like a written elevator pitch about who you are and what value you can add.
Yeah, totally. Like, what did you say the name of the software was that you used to do the thing?
ATS is applicant tracking software, and the actual software, I think the industry standard is like Workable. Okay. If you guys want to sponsor us, then please do. I think Workable is pretty good. And then there's like other ones like JobVite and stuff. Little tip, actually, bit of a side note, but Workable has a very little publicized job board where you can search, like reverse search through companies that use Workable for a job you want, or you can go site Google, or you can go on Google and put site colon Workable and then search for jobs that way. It's a little hack
that's very cool that I
know about. So yeah, useful for anyone that's looking for that first job.
Yeah, good to know. I hadn't heard of these ATSEs or whatever they're called. They're mad. So I guess getting into the more kind of really big points, there's basically three main points that we're going to kind of try and quickly, you know, chat about to take away and have a think about, that you can also read about in our blog, thecodercareer.com/blog, and look for the article, the well-written CV. And the first point is that you should, we see this all the time, people's CVs, they try and use like really, really like
grandiose language when it's not necessary. Yeah. Do you know what, man? That's my pet peeve on TikTok. I constantly see well-meaning advice, probably from people that are still university students, saying like, oh, you didn't stack shelves, you handled inventory transactions for a multi-billion dollar corporation. It's like, you don't need to say that. All you need to say is, I had to hit my targets, and I basically just had to work hard and like think on my feet and quickly do my job and do it effectively. That's all needs to be said. You don't need to like make the language overly complicated.
Exactly.
Like, it's just a bit, you know, every recruiter can kind of see through it. And it's almost like people are like ashamed of working some kind of job like that. Like, I worked in warehouses. I used to be a open top bus tour guide. Like, I've had all kinds of random jobs. And I would never like dress them up like really grandiose, but I would explain how hard work they were, because they were hard work. And I wasn't insecure about it. So I think it's important to consider that.
I think we'll chat a little bit later as well about how much of your background I'm reckoning that most of our listeners are like didn't go straight, not everyone, but most people probably didn't go straight into like their professional IT career.
Yeah, most people don't.
Yeah, most people go like, you know, they've got a few years experience, and that's kind of where most of our advice that we're giving you here is the kind of advice that's like this. That comes from that kind of like way of thinking. It's not, we're not assuming that people have went straight from uni to working. We're kind of assuming that slightly more of our listeners have like diverse backgrounds and various different things, and that's where I can offer, well, we can offer the most amount of tips and experience. And like, yeah, I just really want people to go out there and when they're writing that first paragraph of their CV, or if they're writing those, when you're writing the individual job experience sections, it's really important to try and not overly use like really fancy language. And we've got a couple of examples here. Like, I've got one here that we wrote in the blog. My ability to demonstrate keen and precise understanding of the intricacies of the affirmation technology is evident not only due to the continued commitment to acquiring new experiences with it, but actually, if you just say, I had to become familiar with this tech really quickly, like, it's just so important to just try not use fancy language. But I think there's always, when you're writing a CV, you're trying to impress the person that's reading it, right? But you should stop. Like, stop trying to impress the person reading it.
You're not applying for a journalism job here. Like, that's the thing. Like, yeah. It's great that you can use all this stuff, but it doesn't matter, like, when it comes to coding. And the recruiter just wants to say, okay, can I use Node.js? Yep. And then they just move on. Because they look at a CV for, like, 10 seconds. Really, honestly.
Yeah. What's the next tip then, Cameron?
So, I mean, using too many words in general. Do you know what? In your blog, as much as I enjoyed that, I'm not going to read out the whole thing because I think we'd go well over the like scheduled runtime for this show. No. But I think people can definitely check it out, codacareer.com/blog. It's like you don't want to put too much. It's a pretty simple point and kind of related to previously, but that was more about the language you're using, whereas this is about the sheer volume of what you're actually putting on the CV. You want to do that mainly for two reasons. One, obviously the ease of just scanning it quickly as a recruiter and seeing the key parts. Maybe something as well is maybe put some bits in bold. Can be a bit controversial, but I like to put my technologies in bold when I'm writing things, just so the recruiter can easily look at it. And then also as well, just because you want to keep your CV down. Now, this is highly dependent on where you are from in the world. However, in the UK, I don't like CVs to go beyond two pages. In the US, it's a real rule where you have to keep it to a page, from what I understand.
Oh, so, right.
Particularly if you're American, this is a really tough one. You've really got to be concise and think about how can I get this point across in as few words as possible, but also have those words have as much value as possible. So that's definitely something worth considering, particularly for our American listeners. And I believe in some European countries as well, they're quite strict on keeping it to one page. And in the UK, it's a bit more easy. The worst one, the most bizarre one I saw was a guy who had a 7-page CV, and on the final 7th page was an incredibly compressed JPEG of what appeared to be his passport photo. So don't do that.
Oh my god. Yeah, that's mad. I didn't know about the like almost like rules of it in the US, and I've heard the one page thing for years. And to be honest with you, like, I'm not sure I fully agree with the one page thing. Like, in my list of advice, I would never say try and keep it to one page. I think it's more important to try and keep the language short. Because you could, for example, have a one-page CV that has really long, meandering sentences that use too many words and use like crazy fancy language to try and make them sound like smart, which is what people think that you should do. Whereas I would say that if you just try and get your points across as concisely as possible, in as small a sentences as possible, and try and not use like really 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 overly fancy language, then you're gonna be able to achieve the task of what a CV is and communicate what your experience is. That's just keep in the back of mind, that's what the document's there for. And imagine that somebody's charging you money for each word that you write. Like, that's, and I find that really hard, right? Like, I find that, and I think genuinely it's one of the most difficult things to do is to take a paragraph of these words that you've like painstakingly try to put together in a way that makes you sound absolutely awesome, but to then have somebody come over and be like, yeah, you need exactly half of those words, it can be quite difficult. You know, most of the feedback that we give to people on the Coder Career Discord, we have a CV, and it's really, really lively there, actually. We've got like a CV channel.
CV resume review, and massive shout out to Louise who does a lot of hard work reviewing those CVs for people, so big shout out to her.
Like, the biggest thing there is people coming on and they put out their CV and we look at them, and the first thing is usually like, the first point is usually like, take that section and just reduce the words. Now, this is going to sound really 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 lazy, it's going to sound a little bit mean as well, and it's really not meant as that, but generally when someone sees a block of text, they don't read it, right? Like, they just skim it. They just skim it for like some certain keywords. And I think generally people, like, this is just anecdotal from my point of view. If I see a massive paragraph that goes more than like 4 or 5 lines, I tend to not read it. I know that sounds mad, but like,
I think it's a normal reaction.
I think it is. And I don't think people realize consciously how little people read, and There's actually a really cool thing I was looking at recently. I think I saw it on Hacker News, and I can't remember what it's called, but it's a thing where that people have, researchers have figured out, if you like, if you put certain characters in a word in bold.
Oh, bionic reading.
Bionic reading. Yeah. That's so cool. And I'm not saying that you should. This is not advice to do that for your CV. I did consider.
Well, I think you should for technologies. I think you should.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, yeah, get maybe. React in. Say it's a React job. Let's say it's a front end job. Get React in bold. Get Vue in bold. Get CSS in bold. Because that's what recruiters are looking for.
Those are that's just the whole word in bold. What I'm talking about is another thing, and I can't remember the name of it. And it's like part of the words in bold. And what you do, you read the paragraph, right? And your mind just like flies through it. Yeah. Like, I can't remember what it's called. It is
called bionic reading. This, right? It's worth so people cool. checking out. It's very strange, but very.
Your cool. mind just like flies through it. It's like incredible. Like, I've never seen anything like it. Somebody popped it up on LinkedIn a couple of weeks ago, and
I keep seeing it on LinkedIn.
Quite amazed.
It's but all generally, those, like, self-improvement junkies are like, start reading everything in bionic text.
Yeah. Generally, the advice here, though, is for this point is, like, please, please, please fight the urge to just put tons and tons of words on there. And if you end up explaining like loads of stuff, just try and boil it down, you know. Just try and read it back to yourself and think, what are really the key points here? And I guess that's just really hard because you want to try and make yourself sound that you've got a lot of great experience. So yeah, it's pretty tough. Just try and read it back to yourself and try and kind of summarize it to yourself in a way. And in a weird way, like, I know this is going to sound a little bit harsh, but like certain things about your CV, there people don't care about. And that's quite a difficult thing to say to somebody when you're reviewing their CV. But generally people usually take it pretty well. And we can maybe talk a little bit more about the kind of things that people care about later on.
See, I wonder if we'll disagree on this because I find hobbies and interests have been something that has led to me picking up a lot of conversation with people. Amount of times that like I've basically listed what rugby club I play for, and like the conversation has turned into that, particularly in Scotland, where everyone knows each other in the Central Belt rugby scene. But it is something worth doing. But do you know what's as well? Actually, something pops my head off, which we're meant putting technologies in bold. Do you know a pet peeve of mine that wasn't in the? It's not in the blog post because I don't know if you agree with this or not. Actually, I really don't like when people put technology and then they rate themselves out of 10 on that, or they assign themselves a certain like arbitrary level, because it's really confusing to know what the scale is. Like, I've seen juniors put JavaScript expert. It's like, I've been doing almost exclusively JavaScript for like 4 years now, three of which commercially, and I'm not an expert.
Absolutely. This is a really interesting one that people get asked in interviews. Just a quick segue before we talk about whether I agree with that or not. But like tons and tons of questions years and years ago used to be, oh, like, how do you rate yourself in C++ out of 10? And it used to be that if it's too low, then you're not confident enough, and if it's too high,
you're too
confident, because like apparently like nobody can ever be. But
I don't like those kind of questions.
No, those are awful questions. But in terms of doing it in your CV, I wouldn't agree with putting a number against it. But one of my favorite things to do, and we've not spoken about this yet, it's going to be on the next blog post about CVs, is to put like a little kind of very loose categorization with your comfort with that technology. And one of the reasons I really like it is, and I do it in my CV, as I say, like strong experience with like colon, and then like Java, JavaScript, React, TypeScript. And those are the things that I'm solidly good at.
Yeah.
And then I'll maybe have like a section underneath it to say like still learning, or like currently skilling up, or like, you know, or have experience with, or something like that. And then a list of the things that like I've done.
I was
going to
say, you can almost adapt like the language, how people describe themselves as language, as like fluent, working proficient, like conversational and learning.
Yeah, but I tend to do that. I tend to always have like at least a can like comfortable with, like really confident with, or like strongly proficient with, or whatever language you want to use, just to say that like basically I'm using this every day. Like I'm not an expert. I'm not saying that I'm an expert, because nobody can say that. Like, nobody can say that you're an expert, except maybe you're a very, very few, like handful of people in the world. But it is really good to say currently learning, because that shows that you're like able to, that you are learning and you're keen to learn, and there are things you want to learn. And that's one of the most important things to like get across in your CV. And that's generally that, even though it's not on that blog article, because it's going to be on the next one, because it's more about the structure of the CV. That's going to be one of my biggest pieces of advice, is that that should be really, really high up. It should be like, basically, it should, the structure should be your little personal statement thing, which is like very short about you, and then like your the list of technologies that you're comfortable with. And then I would break that down into a set, like two like main bullet pointed sections. The first section being like proficient with, and then the list of like the two or three or four things that you're like, that you're using every day. And then underneath that, currently learning, and then things that you're like currently learning that you're maybe like not as confident with. So for example, like, and for Matt, for me, it would be like proficient with like Java, JavaScript, TypeScript, currently learning Terraform, Cypress, you know, a bunch of things that I'm not as comfortable with every day, but like I'm picking up currently, because that shows that you're actively learning, and like every single software engineer should be actively learning. Now,
yeah,
we're not saying that you should be doing that in your own time. There's quite a lot of controversy around that actually, but you should definitely be picking up stuff in your job constantly and trying to learn as much as you can in your job constantly.
I would say, I know this is a whole podcast in itself. We have an interesting, because I don't think we've actually said actually how much experience we have. You've got around 14 years experience, and I've got around 3.
Yeah.
So we're at quite different stages in our career. I would say if you can do it, because I understand like some people cannot have any spare time outside of work because they've got commitments or dependents or things like that. And that's totally fair enough. But if you're able to do so, then I highly recommend, if you're in my kind of experience level, you really should at least put a couple of hours in per week. Like I do it as well. Put in a couple of hours per week into learning something new. Your work should hopefully give you time to do it. But if they don't, then try and do it yourself.
Yeah, that's a really good point. I think the work point is really, really important. Particularly with the way people live and people have commitments, and not everyone can dedicate that time to like spend time outside of work, like coding. And I think for quite a while, like over the last couple of years, there's been a big like thing, and oh, you have to like live and breathe code. And I can't stand those. Those LinkedIn articles that come out and like, I coded every single day for a year, and like here's a screenshot of my LinkedIn,
GitHub. You want to talk in inclusivity, how's that inclusive for someone that's a single parent and has got to look after kids? How are they supposed to code every day?
Those people can absolutely 100% still be soft. Like you can still be a professional software engineer and not be coding every single night in your evenings. And I just want to make sure that like we're at the Coder Career, we're, as much as we are for like growth and everything on all the rest of it, like we are also massively in favor of like growing sustainably and not being one of these people that like you don't have to kill yourself to code or even spend any more time like thrashing out like in your front room like as much as you can just to learn a bit extra and living it and breathing it and all the rest of it.
I think I like how you said the word sustainable. I think we're about sustainable personal growth and development and breaking into tech industry and selecting an employer that will allow you to maximize your personal growth whilst on the clock, because it really is a win-win. Both of us work for organizations to give us what you call 10% time, where we get a day every fortnight to just work on our skills. And I've been working on Java and I've been really enjoying it, and it's really helped me in my day job, not just working on Java stuff, like thinking about how systems work. And I'm sure the back-end developers that I work with are very happy with me because I'm more sympathetic to their problems, and I try and write front-end code that interacts better with the back-end code. So that's a very specific example, but you should try. And it's a real, this isn't a red flag, green flag podcast for employers, because that's a whole blog post and podcast in itself. But if the employer gives you 10% time, that is a big old green flag.
Definitely a green flag. It's also the sort of thing that like, if you're not sure what to ask about in an interview, if you're at the sort of start of going for your first job, being able to sit there in the interview or in the Zoom and say, hey, do you have 10% time, and do you allow people to learn, and what training and options and various other things do you provide to and support do you provide as part of the role?
Yeah, because some places have a learning budget. Like at my work, definitely. We have a Udemy, I think it's called, subscription, Udemy's which is great. Quite cool. Yeah, you just access everything on there, which is awesome. Lots of companies have different approaches to it, but that kind of stuff is really positive.
That was a really good little not intended segue discussion, but I think it's really important to have. Let's move on to the next point. The next point is cliches, right? And this is one that I get all the time. What are your favorite cliches that you've seen in your CV and CVs you've looked over, Cameron?
That's a good question. I mean, that's the classic hobbies and interests. I like reading and going to the cinema, which is
actually, I like long walks on the beach, pina coladas.
Somebody's added that to someone's added that from a CV template. You know that song "Pina Coladas"? That's about having an affair. It's not a love song. Anyway, that's a tangent.
Which is a love song.
In a twisted way, though. Yeah. Anyway, I think there's a lot of cliches around. I mean, it's not on a CV, but this always brings me back to The Apprentice when they ask that candidate in the boardroom. And for anyone who's not seen it, The Apprentice is a very silly UK show where Alan Sugar chooses. Yeah, but I can't stop watching.
I hate it. Really?
Yeah. When Alan Sugar selects basically from a pool of 20 people, they get some investment. Anyway, he speaks to this guy in the boardroom and he says, "Jim, describe yourself without using any cliches." And he looks blankly at him and he just goes, "I am what it says on the tin." Like, just stuff like that. Any kind of phrases. Talking about like punctuality. I know you put that in the blog, I think. Talking about punctuality, like that's kind of expected. Hard working. It's really meaningless because everyone says that. Like, think about, I mean, it's not even just about cliches. Just think about, like, is everyone going to say this? Yes, then probably don't say it. And I think I probably can't give a better example than what you did in the blog. And if it's all right, I'll read it out, actually.
Absolutely.
Saying, "I am a reliable, punctual, hardworking team player who can deliver results on time. I take my work seriously and can communicate well. I can engage with different stakeholders, such as clients, managers, and co-workers. I can work in a fast-paced environment," big cliche, "and learn on the job." That's pretty much the perfect example. I couldn't think of a better one.
Don't do that, basically. We're saying don't do that. If you
we're saying don't
forward,
do that.
If you just fast forward and you hear Cameron,
nobody
now,
clips
like,
that. Yeah.
Somebody's like, "Oh shit, I better get that in my CV ASAP." We're basically saying don't do that. Now, let me just try and explain why you shouldn't do that. Like, I think when you're at the beginning of your career and you're starting out and you're trying to build your CV, I think people just assume that you should put that stuff on your CV because I think people think that if they don't put that, then the employer, the prospective employer, will think that their that person's not punctual and they can't deliver on time and they're not a team player and they can't communicate. But actually, like, and I can't emphasize this enough, but you're just wasting word space. You're taking words that just do not need to be written down at all and writing them down. And the reason for that is because and I can't emphasize this enough, in a technical professional environment where people are working every day to try and work collaboratively to deliver software through like various software delivery techniques, whatever it is you're using, but it's a very complicated, technical achievement, requires a lot of like interaction and things. You kind of need these basics. You kind of need them. You need them so much that they're obvious prerequisites of being a professional, full stop. Like, they're so like underpinning to the whole thing of being a professional technologist that it sounds mental, but you shouldn't mention them. Like, And then you might be thinking, what should I say instead? And what you should say instead is you should give examples of things your achievements that you've done, the things that you've actually tried to do that highlight and imply those qualities, you know? So let's say you've worked in a scrum team, right? If let's say you have, you've maybe done a little bit of that, or maybe you've done a little bit of practice on Scrum when you were at a boot camp, or you've done a little, you tried to work in an agile team when you were at a boot camp just for your big project, you know. Highlight that, right? And talk about that, right? And let the fact that you understand that and how that process works shine through. You'll get points there on a technical level to say this person understands what the value of that Scrum process is and the Agile process is. But you'll also get points to say, like, this person isn't as going down the obvious route of just saying, yeah, I work well on a team and I'm punctual. Like, and actually, in a weird way, like, working well on a team is higher in the pecking order of being punctual. Like, in a weird way, in a completely mad professional setting where people are trusted to do their job and trusted to deliver the results,
which is most tech companies,
like, being punctual is, I'm not right now saying by the way that you don't need to be punctual, right? Like, what I'm saying though,
rock
is
up 15 minutes late to stand up each morning and see what happens.
you definitely shouldn't do that, right? Obviously, but in a weird way, it's the thing that people care about the least out of all those cliched things, you know. I'm definitely not saying that you shouldn't be punctual, but what I am saying is that you should try and explain the things that you've done and the things that you understand and the things that you've kind of worked with in a way that implies your punctuality, implies the fact that you can communicate well. Like, and somebody that has any like reasonable understanding of how teams work, which is hopefully most people, will be able to actually look at that and go, okay, this person is obviously fairly capable at being a human being, because let's be honest, being punctual, being able to being a team player. Somebody once years ago told me that those are the playground skills, right? You develop those skills, being able to work well with people, being able to communicate with people. You develop those as toddlers, right? And then you spend the rest of your life as a human being trying to improve on those skills as much as possible. And some people do a better job of that than others, and we're always going to have people in teams that do a better job of that than others. But, like, let's just make an assumption straight up the back that if you're a professional who's applying for a professional role, which even if you're coming out of a boot camp, you are, then let's just assume that you've kind of got the basics. And let's make it so that you can use those word spaces, the spaces that you'd be putting those words in, to put something that's going to have a lot more impact on that CV that's going to imply all of those things. And that's just really, really important. I cringe, but in a weird way, when I see those words, but I also like get really happy because it's the easiest way to help someone with their CV to be like, rip out all of those words. Like,
absolutely. And it makes them stand out.
Yeah.
Because a lot of CVs, I can say, like, I've seen those cliches a million times, and you know, it's one of those things where, like, it's a relief when you don't. And something actually you brought up was the speaking about the skills that you develop on a boot camp and within the agile framework. And something I actually really like is when juniors will talk about their boot camp like it's quote unquote real experience, like commercial experience, because it is, and it's the closest thing you have. And I think it kind of segues nicely into your next point about keeping the role history relevant. If I'm recruiting a junior who's maybe come out of a boot camp, I would much rather have a long paragraph about their time at CoClam, for instance, than I would about their time working as a working front of house at Pizza Express. No hate on Pizza Express, love it.
Absolutely.
But, just trying to think of a restaurant near my house. But yeah, it's so much more relevant.
Yeah, this is one of the hardest things to tell people, right? Because people, particularly if you're a career changer, and we know that a lot of you are,
and I am as well.
Yeah,
so I know how these people feel.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, it's totally. And it's tough because you've spent a long time, you know, doing a really good job at lots and lots of amazing things. And the thing that's hard for people to do is to is some people say, and I only partially agree with it, that you should really, really, I only agree with it for certain roles and for certain things, that you should like ride heavily on your previous experience, and that's what sets you apart. I think that's true to some extent, but on the other hand, it kind of doesn't. I know that sounds, this is very difficult advice to give, and I know that a lot of people might not agree with this, but on one hand, if you've got a background that's relevant to your technology career that you are in or that you're about to start or venture into, then you should definitely mention that. Mm-hmm. You shouldn't, in my opinion, go into a tremendous amount of detail on it. It's definitely worth mentioning. If you have a background that's got not much relevance to what you're doing at all, you should mention it, but mention it in a lot more of a brief way, basically. And I think that's because it's basically people don't care. I know this sounds really harsh.
It's brutal, but it's quite
totally
true.
Brutal. Yeah. It's totally brutal. And this is the hardest thing to give people advice on. I've seen so many CVs that are like that list, and this is an example that we've got in the blog post, list like every job they've had from like 2020 all the way back to like 2013, 2009.
Because by the time you're in your 50s, your CV will go on for pages. That's
yeah,
the thing.
It doesn't
with
sense,
how our generations
right?
are with, yeah. with moving jobs. I mean, yep. to give the listeners an example, I mean, you know, I'm a career changer. So how I've handled this, one, I don't have my warehouse jobs or my open top bus stall jobs on my CV anymore, just because they are 100% irrelevant. Obviously, they can see that I graduated university in 2016, but I didn't become a developer until later on. So what I have is I've written various technology recruitment and sales roles, more details available upon request. And I think on my LinkedIn, because you can be a bit more verbose, I still do list each individual one, but I don't leave any details. There was one particularly bad recruitment agency where I thought about leaving the details, as everyone makes mistakes, but I didn't want to get sued. I've got like basically more details available upon request, or like one of them I've got UK employee number 4 because I was early there. And then the final one, talent.io, I just explained, you know, this is where basically I decided I want to be a coder. I have stuff like that, but on the CV itself, it's just under one block. And if the interviewer wants to ask me about it, I'm more than welcome to. But I put way more depth into the programming work I've done.
That's a good point. I think that's the best advice. We want to give people actionable advice here. I hate it when people are like, don't do this, and then they never suggest what you should do. Yeah. So we're basically saying, to summarize this a little bit, we're saying don't give a massive list of all of your all of the restaurants and bars and shops and marketing agencies and whatever it is that you've done try and keep that list brief.
Yeah.
And if it's a really long list, just say various roles across, you know, the example in the blog is like similar to your CV, Cam. Various roles across hospitality, retail, and business. Please ask if you'd like an insight into those. And
you don't need to shoehorn in technical stuff if there's no technical stuff involved. Like in your one, you do give a good example where if someone worked with a CRM system, it's probably worth them saying. But this isn't a technical example, but this is when I did graduate recruitment. And somebody who'd done a degree in, I don't want to accidentally dox this guy. He'd done a degree in, we'll call it Swedish. It wasn't Swedish. It was another European language. And he worked in a supermarket somewhere in rural northeast of England. And he said, a key role for me here was if a customer who could not speak English and only spoke Swedish would enter the store, I would be there to assist them. It's like, that never happened. don't shoehorn in these random scenarios. I mean, maybe I'm wrong, but like, you know, don't shoehorn in random scenarios for the sake of it to like try and say that, you know, I did this and I did that. If it's relevant to the technology industry, like for example your example about the CRM system, like if you were maybe working customer service, that's worth you saying. But like shoehorning things in, you know, recruiters will be able to tell if it's probably a bit of a stretch, shall we say?
Yep. I guess the difficult thing is for people that are doing this, that the experience is if it's not relevant, it's not relevant, and you just have to face that fact and just try and summarize it as briefly as you possibly can. I've just written on the blog, like, the most important point here is the relevant part. For example, in a snippet that we've got there in the blog, the candidate had dozens of jobs, and as difficult as it may be, if the roles aren't relevant to your abilities as a software engineer, then you really need to try and narrow that down. Now, we've also got an example of somebody who, let's say, for example, you're a bit like me and you've been there in the industry for like more than 10 years. That is all. This advice also applies to that.
Do you do about a role 10 years ago and you've had three roles since?
Yeah,
and you want to keep it down.
I think the best thing to do is just to keep the roles that are closer to now, like a little bit more, like put a little bit more explanation into them. And the further you go back in time, just almost just be like, just make it like really like one word, like, you know, for example, 2009 to 2018, like software engineer at Acme Co Limited, building like something, and then tech used,
yeah.
Java.
Yeah,
JavaScript.
Always keep the tech used, because not going too into depth on ATSs here, but you can like search for tech used on the ATS and that sort of thing, and never, ever, ever leave them out, because you'll get missed by keyword matches. And in fact, on your LinkedIn as well, like, I have it buried in my About Me section. I have like a massive list of technologies. On the flip side, actually, let's say, not to pick on PHP, but if you don't want to work with PHP anymore, which lots of people don't, you can remove that from your CV and remove it from your LinkedIn, and recruiters won't contact you about it. Little hack for you there. The next thing that you've written on the blog is about STAR, and I like this a lot. I think it's a really good way of framing things. Do you want to explain about what STAR is?
Yeah, so STAR is a thing that's, I think, used a little bit more in interview techniques than it is in CV writing, but I think people often, and the advice that I've read about online and heard people talk about in various capacities is that if you're talking about like something in your CV, you should present that thing as a situation that you've been in, and then present the task that you then try to take on as a result of that situation, and then what action you took to like address that task and explain that, and then what the gain was from the benefit was from doing that action, the reward. So situation, task, action, reward, STAR. It's the STAR technique, and you can just Google that, STAR technique interview or STAR technique CV. It'll come up straight away. Now, yeah, what were you going to say?
Listeners didn't see me like opening and I shut my mouth there, but I thought you were carrying on. I was going to say, always frame things in commercial terms, because yes, software engineering is a craft. But unfortunately, people don't always just pay you to be a great craftsman. So talk about the commercial impact, either how you made money for the company or saved the company money.
Yeah.
I reduced the AWS bill by 18%. I increased landing page conversion by 42%. Stuff like that is great.
Yeah.
Get it in numbers. Yeah. Quantifiable numbers is great. I understand that's not like possible for absolutely everything, but you know, particularly lowering cloud bills, companies will be very pleased to hear about that, so for sure.
Yeah, it's not possible to quantify absolutely everything you're doing, but generally if you're an engineer or if you're doing something on any kind of team, even if it's a project within your like final project part of your bootcamp or your degree, there's a reason you're doing it, right? So like try and think about that. You know, the example I've got there on the blog, which I highly encourage people to have a wee skim over and reread, is like, don't do, for example, responsible for building caching middleware using Redis and Java. The end.
Yeah.
Instead, do something like, built caching middleware using Redis and Java. This delivered a 50% reduction in hits on underlying services and improved application performance. Now, even if you're only guessing, right, it's worth putting in. If you know exactly, then that's great.
Yeah, it's even better. But if you can approximate, then it's still fine. There'll still be interest in hearing about it.
Yeah. And the thing about the STAR technique, though, is that I'm not huge on sticking to explaining a situation in detail, explaining a task in detail, explaining action in detail, and explaining a reward in detail. I'm actually not a fan of that. So I say instead, just do TR, task, mm-hmm. reward. And I think if you do that on your CV, not for everything, but like for some things where you can, if you can, then explaining the task and explaining the reward is enough to be able to be like, okay, this person's kind of got some understanding of why that team exists, or what that team was trying to do, and that's at least. So, but I'm really not a fan of like of going down the whole situation, task, action, reward. Some people even advise people to say like, I was in a situation where this happened, and then I decided to make myself this task, or as a team we decided to make this task. And then I took the following action, and you're like, oh my God, you're literally spelling it out. Don't do that. That's not the point of the STAR technique. To me, point of the STAR technique is just to remind you to like, if you're saying I used this tech on this team, or we used like this authentication system on this team and we done blah, then being able to go, we done blah because it helped with Z, then that's a benefit. You're seeing that you've thought about you're thinking about the overall product. And as I say, even if that is you're on your bootcamp and you're doing a big project as part of your final project, and you're saying, oh, we used, you know, as part of this, we used like Okta authentication, which meant that we didn't have to build authentication ourselves, which means that we're saving a lot of like dev time, and we're also like building a more secure system, you know? Like explain to people why the decisions that you've made and the jobs that you've done, no matter how little they are, explain why that's useful.
Yeah, definitely. And everyone hates building authentication.
there's also that.
Cool. And in terms of the last point is what makes you tick?
Yeah.
It's interesting this, because this is more of like, it's adding a bit of personality to the CV, which I think is important, and it can get lost sometimes in this kind of paint by numbers fashion that there is in technology careers, and particularly for graduate tech careers. I shudder when I go on like the Reddit, on the subreddits for like computer science careers questions, because these people do sometimes come across like robots. And I really like that you've included this. Because you just want to explain your whys and you know, what's it all about, and particularly for career changes. Like, it's great to explain why you're interested in switching over. Like, what inspired you? Like, I was talking to someone at the meetup the other night. It was Francis, now that I remember rightly. Francis was saying about, like, customizing, like, MySpace pages and that sort of thing, and that's what she enjoyed doing. And I think that sort of thing is really cool. Like, explain that sort of thing on your CV. Like, that,
definitely,
it's great to have a personal story behind it. Like, that's exactly the sort of thing you want to have. Like, mine is a bit more like, I just thought it was more interesting and I wanted to build solutions for myself. And I guess I also said, I want to be an entrepreneur long term. Probably don't put that on the CV, but it's really worth considering. And I really like you included this, because it shows people are humans, right?
Humans are people. Coders are people too. People are humans. Coders are people. Are humans are too. I don't know.
That's not going to catch on, I don't think.
No. No. The point here is that the biggest thing, I think, and this is maybe a little bit more focused on career changers as well, is they make the assumption, and this maybe not just career changers, but just junior engineers and junior technologists, whether you're in your like year one, year two, year three of that journey, they in my opinion, they tend to not be that opinionated. And this is a really tough topic, opinion, right? Because when you're being hired as an engineer, you kind of are you're being hired in a professional setting, and for the most part, they want the people hiring you want you to be able to have an opinion. They want to be able to say, like, what do you like? What do you dislike? What do you love? Like, what do you hate? I know for a fact that if I'm looking for somebody to, like, come and work with me on a team, I really want to know what makes them tick, right? Like, because like, no offense to anybody that doesn't like JavaScript, but, like, I need somebody that loves JavaScript, you know? I need somebody that, like, really likes Spring Boot, you know, in the teams that I work in, and really likes that whole thing. And, like, if you don't, then, like, no matter how good a coder you are, like, I'm not really keen on hiring somebody that doesn't, like, quite like the tech that I need them to be able to help me with. And that may be being a little bit picky, but the lesson here is having an opinion is important, but also at the same time, knowing how to wield that opinion for your level and for your experience level is important too. So the big one is just, like, tell me in your CV what you love. You know, tell me what is, like, what do you love doing? Do you love going into a team and rallying everyone and being the person who speaks up for and gets behind and supports people in a more inclusive way? Are you the person who is gonna support people and help people and become an advocate for LGBT, like trans rights, all that sort of stuff? Are you going to be the person who does that? Are you going to be is that what you love to do? If that's what you love to do, then tell us. If you're the person who, like, loves like SAS, SCSS, you love that, can't get any more of that, tell us. If you love Next, you know, that's the thing that you like to get involved in, tell us. Like, if it's really important. I used to say to people, and it sounds a little bit weird, I used to say to people, like, bleed a little bit, like let me hear you, let me hear the human. Like, I'm interested in if you can do the stuff, of course, but I also want to know what is really, really, really fundamentally making you tick, like, on a professional level. Like, I don't, like, I kind of want to hear a little bit about, like, what you like to do outside the work. Yeah, of course, because that's a little bit of context and insight. But I kind of gain a lot more from knowing your loves and hates. And then that makes me realize that you've got an opinion, and I kind of need you to have an opinion. And people that are looking for somebody to join their team, they need opinion. They need, like, I think we should do it this way.
And don't be afraid to have an opinion as a junior either.
Exactly. But if you're gonna wield opinion, you really do need to wield it wisely, because it can be very difficult. You can get yourself in some difficult situations in teams if you're, like, overly opinionated. And the advice that people tend to give on this is to try because it is difficult, but try and hold your strong opinions weekly. You know, and that's not weeek. It's weak. You know, weak. Don't hold on to them tightly. And that's tough. Like, that's really, really hard. Like,
people respect people that are willing to change their mind on things.
Yeah.
Not just in technology, but in life in general.
Exactly. And I think this is probably, like, a whole other set of discussion. But if some quick tips on that. If you do need to try and, like, hold your opinions more weekly. Is that a word? More weekly?
Yeah, weaker? I think so. It'll do. Yeah,
yeah. People know what I'm talking about. Then, bit of advice on that, just quickly, while we're talking about it, is figure out what your threshold of a thing is. Right. So let's say you've got a PR up and you've expressed an opinion, or somebody else has got a PR up and you've expressed an opinion. Like, figure out when you're going into that discussion. The first thing I think is, do I really need to say this? Right. And have a think about that. And then think to yourself, what is my threshold? How much do I really care about this? Like, do I care strongly about it? then think, why do you care strongly about it? And then think, what is the impact of that thing like going in? And what is the impact of that thing not going in? Because most opinions kind of tend to be kind of come out around PRs and reviews and discussions about technology and discussions about how to push the product forward. And I think that if you just figure out what you need, right? And if you see something and you like really strongly disagree with it, just confirm with yourself, do I really, really, really strongly disagree with this? Like, and what value am I going to get out of disagreeing with it? And nine times out of 10, you'll end up deleting that comment and just being like, screw it. I mean, like, what's the worst that can happen? Now, that's obviously anecdotal, like, depends on very many, many, many things. But even though we're saying here the advice is to tell us your opinions, we'll maybe get another podcast about doing how to do that in teams. But this advice for now is just on CVs, right? It's just it's an example of like here's a good example of it, right? A little intro on someone. In my year of working professionally as an engineer, I realized that I absolutely love working with Next.js, right? That's really like just to quickly put it aside there. If I'm reading that and I'm on a team that uses Next, like, this is a really good sign, right? Somebody says, in my year working professionally as an engineer, I realized that I love Next.js. Because you need to, or even if you just like it, like, I really like Next.js. I think it's really cool. This technology has me really excited for the future, and I'm really passionate about helping other people use it, or whatever. Just tell us a little bit about how you feel about that thing. Or it could be like that you're just really passionate about just generally helping people in the team. Tell us if something reads something along the lines of, in the first couple of years of my career, I've unlocked a passion for helping and mentoring others in my team. Like, you have totally caught the eyes of somebody, and you're kind of punching at a mid-level by doing that and being helping people in your team and like, you know, kind of heading towards the sort of senior level of being an engineer. And if you can tell people what you love and what you don't talk about things you hate. Just don't go on your CV and be like, I hate JavaScript. You know,
I've seen that before, and it's not a good look.
Not a good look. Yeah. So I realize I'm maybe going on about this pretty hard, but like, just give me a little bit of insight into what makes you grow.
And one opinion that we do really care about is the opinion of our listeners.
Yes.
So, what a segue. Spotify and Apple Podcasts do allow you to rate. And another thing as well, if you want to hear more insights like this, and we mentioned a CV and resume review channel on our Discord, if you go to thecodacareer.com/discord, you can sign up for free and get involved. We do also have a suggestions channel on Discord, which is well used by a lot of people who contribute to the show. And it is very important to us to get feedback because, you know, the show. I started doing this before Colin joined around a year ago now, and we've done over 40 episodes, and, you know, I like to think the quality's gone up, especially since you joined.
Thanks, bro.
A lot of that is thanks to the kind feedback that the audience has honestly provided us. So we're really grateful for that. And if you're someone that's, I don't know, like a lurker who just listens to us but hasn't got involved in Discord yet because they're feeling a bit shy about it, like, just get stuck in. We'd love to hear from you, and any suggestions you have to improve the podcast, we'd be really keen, especially for topic ideas rather than just interviews, it's just me and Colin, because we're going to try and make it a ratio of 50-50 interviews to this.
Yeah, we're just going to try and have more chats like this as well. This has been a really good one, and we're meant to only do it for half an hour, but it's been 58 minutes.
Yeah, we're running on an hour now.
But that's my fault. Yeah. It always
is. It's mine as well. It's because there's so much good content. And would you believe that's only part one of three on the blog post? So definitely check out the blog for more. But we both really appreciate all the continued support, and it was so nice to meet some of you last week as well over at XDesign, and we'll let everyone know like when the next event is, and we're really keen on doing more of that, and hopefully the video on demand will be up roughly when this is out, I hope. We just need to get some technicals sorted, but yeah, thank you to all the listeners for tuning in for another week of The Coder Career, and happy coding. Was there anything else you want to add, Colin?
No, thanks everyone, have a great cool. Whatever you're doing.
Have a great week.